Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
Hello, this is Patricia Lemmer. Welcome to the Autism Detectives. Today I have as my guest Jennifer Laudie. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, Patty. Good to be here.
It's just so much fun. Jennifer and I are new friends. We just met in Boise, Idaho, where she is the director of Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy of Idaho. Jennifer, you have such an interesting background. You've been all over the map in psychiatry and neuroscience and psychology, and you were so kind to let me teach one of your classes at Boise State. What was the name of that class?
The name of that class was Holistic Psychiatry, which for modern psychiatry is a bit of an oxymoron, but that's the title. Yeah.
So Holistic Psychiatry, those were some of the most engaged students I've ever spoken to. So, Jennifer, how did you get into this crazy world of autism?
Well, like we discussed, it is a bit of a long story, but to simplify it.
Give me the short version.
I will give you the short version. So I'm a neuroscientist. My PhD is in behavioral neuroscience and psychopharmacology. And then I did a postdoc at Stanford with cross appointments in psychiatry and neuroscience. And
wow.
I learned a lot while I was there. And one of the things that I learned was specific to autism, which was that they were saying it's kind of a hopeless situation and there's not much to be done. And that's not something I was willing to accept.
Yeah, we don't believe
truth.
That for sure.
We don't believe that. And I kind of knew at that point that I was in the wrong place. So,
were you a heretic before or were you kind of mainstream?
Yeah, I've always been a heretic. It's in my blood.
Yeah, me too.
That's why we get along so well.
Yep. So when you went into psychopharmacology and neuroscience, you were fighting.
Yes, I was. And I did struggle with it from day one because it is more of a traditional medical model that's applied.
Yeah. So what did you learn about autism besides that it was hopeless?
Well, you know, honestly, there was a lot of talk amongst counselors about, unfortunately, the children being unbearable and the stimming was not, they didn't understand it. Just a lot of ignorance,
right.
But at the same time, confidence that nothing could be done.
Wow.
So that was highly irritating.
So how did that lead you to Hyperbaric? You must have met some of the early people who were using Hyperbaric with autism, because I remember when Shannon Kennett started using it with her daughter, who is, I think in her 20s now.
Mm-hmm.
Did you run into her?
Oh, yes, I did.
Yep.
In fact, I was interested in Hyperbaric for reasons other than autism initially, but I went to an International Hyperbaric Association conference, and lo and behold, Dr. Rosignol was speaking about autism specifically.
Right. So what year was that?
That was 3 years ago.
Oh, so it was recently.
Fairly recent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Dr. Rosignol is one of the big names in autism, and I think he owns a hyperbaric center now.
Mm-hmm.
And has done some of the research. Is that right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So does research show about hyperbaric and autism?
Well, honestly, like most things in literature, it is a mixed bag as far as the research goes. But as a research scientist, I can tell you that experimental design for studies on hyperbarics are very difficult, and that's because it's very hard to simulate a placebo effect in a hyperbaric chamber because can sense the change in pressure in their ears, and if that's not there, they know.
Right.
But there are studies, such as Rossignol's 2009 multi-center study, that showed he used fairly low pressure, and he did 40 sessions over the course of, I believe, a month or two. And if you look at placebo relative to what we would call active dose or treatment, where they did hyperbarics, they found an overwhelmingly positive effect of treatment. So what happened? He saw receptive language improved, social interaction and eye contact, overall functioning. But for me, what really drove it home is when I saw samples of the children's handwriting before and after.
How interesting.
And it was at that conference that I saw that, and I was like, wow, there is something here. So
for our listeners who hyperbaric is a new subject, can you explain what hyperbaric oxygen therapy is? People may know it because of its use in, say, drownings where people become anoxic. But tell us what happens, basically, when you have a hyperbaric session.
Sure. So what happens is you're sitting, standing, lying, you're in an enclosure where we're moving air or oxygen into the chamber to increase atmospheric pressure. So right now, in normobaric conditions, just on land as a normal person, we're at about one atmosphere, and that's just the weight of the air upon us. When you do hyperbarics, we increase the pressure to above normobaric conditions, so 1.3 absolute atmospheres, and three are typically the treatment. That's the treatment range. So when you're in this vessel that increases atmospheric pressure, either the vessel has filled itself with oxygen or you're breathing oxygen through a mask, and it's 100% oxygen.
But your whole body's exposed, right?
Yeah, your entire body is encapsulated in this vessel. That's correct.
Does it go through the skin, too, into the organs?
Well, what happens when you increase atmospheric pressure is that it increases the partial pressure of oxygen in tissue, organs, blood. But the difference between having, for example, a face mask on in normobaric conditions and in hyperbaric conditions is where the oxygen can go.
Okay.
So just very basic chemistry, as we increase atmospheric pressure, it causes the oxygen to dissolve into fluids in the body, and so it dissolves into the lymph, the cerebral spinal fluid, and the plasma, which that doesn't happen on land, so to speak, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's the hyperbaric effect.
Wow.
Once it's there,
and so why does this help kids with autism?
Good question. So we increase oxygen delivery to hypoxic tissues. Once we have oxygen in the CSF, the cerebral spinal fluid, we can reduce neuroinflammation, so inflammation in the brain. There's actually evidence that hyperbarics moderates mitochondria dysfunction, which there's some implications for that being an issue in autism.
Right.
It promotes neurogenesis, especially for children who have had some kind of a birth injury. It can promote the growth of new neurons in the brain. I mean, I can go on.
That's
list.
Really, really interesting. Now, when you were describing Dr. Rossignol's research, you said there were 40 sessions. That sounds like a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a lot of, like, one session of hyperbaric doesn't do a whole lot.
Well, in the context of autism, I would say no, it does not. And I think you and I discussed a pretty beautiful analogy. Hyperbarics is not like trying escargot, right? It's a commitment, right? You know, escargot is one sampling. Do I like it? Yes or no? Hyperbarics is, okay, It's a significant time commitment. It's a minimum of 40 sessions, or a minimum of 20, and it's not spaced out over time. There's this huge misconception that, you know, if I do 40 sessions over a year, that's functionally equivalent to doing 40 in a month, and that is demonstrably false.
So the good effect accumulates onto each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now there's a couple of ways of delivering this. I've seen different kinds of chambers at different autism meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Can you discuss those?
Sure. So there are largely two classes of chambers. So there are soft shell chambers, and then there are hard shell chambers. So soft shell chambers, the FDA, the lovely FDA, has put a law in place that stipulates that we cannot exceed 1.3 atmospheres in a soft shell chamber that's in the home. And so those chambers can only go to 1.3. Legally speaking.
That's not a lot, is that right?
Well, it actually, it's significant. I mean, it's not a lot relative to...
It can do something, but it doesn't do as much as the heart chamber?
Not necessarily. So, in fact, there's research showing that mild hyperbarics or lower pressure is as efficacious or more effective than higher pressure for certain things. Now, if we're talking about infection, I would persuade people to do high-pressure hyperbarics in a hard shell chamber because you need that higher pressure to, you know, kill the bacteria. But
so a hard goes up to what pressure?
Most of the, medical chambers can go up to 6 atmospheres.
6?
And that's not something that we tend to do in treatment. It's just if it's being used in a diving facility and someone has the bends, you need to meet the pressure where that nitrogen bubble occurred. But functionally in medicine, it's between 1.3 and you don't exceed 3 atmospheres.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long is each session?
Session time varies, but usually it's 60 minutes once you're at pressure.
Mm-hmm. And how long does it take to get up to pressure?
That's a really interesting question. So it depends on a number of things, but one of those is the level of neuroinflammation and the extent to which someone can clear their eustachian tubes. And what I find is that children with autism, older people with dementia, and Alzheimer's take significantly longer to clear their ears than others.
So like your ears stop up like you're in an airplane?
Right. So it can take anywhere between 2 minutes in a soft shell chamber to I've had people take 45 minutes even. Because they have significant inflammation, and it hurts. But it usually does not. But we go slow so that we don't cause any damage. Lots of variability there.
So does a child with autism or a person with autism go into this chamber alone, or can they go in with a parent?
Oh, absolutely. They can go in with a parent, yeah.
So the parent's getting the treatment,
caregiver.
Too.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Because I think it would be kind of scary for a child to do this by himself.
Oh, wow. No, it's a family affair.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, I don't know what I feel like I know what your perspective on this might be, but oftentimes, you know, parents and caregivers, they need hyperbarics too.
Yeah.
They're under a lot of stress.
Of course.
And
so everybody's benefiting.
Yeah.
So do you do some kind of pre- and post-testing on, like you say, it depends on the level of inflammation. How do we know how much inflammation somebody has pre-therapy?
That's a good question. There are various ways that we can assess baselines, but some of the things that we do, Most commonly in the hyperbaric literature are SPECT scans, so that's measuring cerebral blood flow to the brain. Also, EEG is used. One of my favorites is heart rate variability and assessing the adaptability and functionality of the autonomic nervous system. So hyperbarics pushes people into parasympathetic. And oftentimes we see people with significant inflammation and chronic disease, they're in a constant state of sympathetic. So they're seeing tigers despite tigers not being there. Right.
So I'm thinking about some of the viruses and bacteria that many of our kids with autism have that are anaerobic. So they live in a non-oxygen environment. Is this therapy targeted to them because it floods them with oxygen and kills them?
Absolutely, yes. That's good point.
Yeah, that's where I would think that it would be most helpful. And so you might get some kind of a die-off effect.
Exactly.
And what would that look like?
It can look like a lot of different things, but I'll tell you quickly that another beauty of hyperbarics is that those bacteria and viruses, they're smart, and oftentimes they hide out in biofilms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so hyperbarics actually penetrates the biofilms and causes...
Does it really?
Yeah. So die-offs happen as they would, you know, in any other way. You know, Herx reactions are not uncommon. We see cytokine activity acutely increase, but then decrease. And usually what we do to remedy that is not only continuing hyperbarics to lower cytokine count over time, but also using binders like activated charcoal and chlorella. And oftentimes people are undergoing chelation therapy simultaneously.
So you target their digestive systems.
Yes, absolutely.
And so they might get a little diarrhea. Would they get constipation or more likely diarrhea?
You know, it's interesting. One of the, and Dr. Rosignol says this, one of the first things that he notices about children who are treated with hyperbarics is that they go to the bathroom regularly.
They poop better, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's
right. So
interesting.
It actually heals the stomach lining.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I think you and I talked about this a bit, which was at what point should someone do hyperbarics, a child with autism?
Right.
And generally, as a rule, I do like to see gut health in a fairly good place before we do hyperbarics. But hyperbarics also heals glyphosate injury, inflammation in the stomach. So I do like to see at least a nutritionist, a functional nutritionist on board for hyperbarics. But hyperbarics can also help with gut health as well.
So the timing of hyperbaric in a multidisciplinary program is very individual and and requires some sleuthing to figure it out. What is that accurate?
Some detective work, like what we're talking about.
I love the detective work. You do too.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when I hear parents say, have you tried hyperbaric for your child, and the child may be 3 and has never had any therapy, or he may be 12 and he's had tons of therapy, or he may be a young adult and has had all kinds of different therapies, and parents have sort of stopped and all of a sudden hear about this magical therapy. Each one of those cases is really different, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think I want to save the how do you know when to initiate hyperbaric for our next session, after the break. But I think that this is so important for parents to hear this part of it, that hyperbaric is not something that you just take off the shelf.
Right.
So, Jennifer, when we come back, let's talk about a little more in depth about how a parent would know that it's too early or it's just the right time or if hyperbaric's right for them. So you're
right.
Listening to the Autism Detectives, and this is Patricia Lemmer. I have as my guest today Jennifer Laudy, and she's in Boise, Idaho, and the director of the Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy of Idaho. So we'll be right back.
What makes us different? You. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Patricia Lemmer, and I'm talking to my friend Jennifer Laudy in Boise, Idaho, where she's the director of Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy of Idaho. Welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Now, you were talking about the timing of hyperbaric, and this is such an important piece. Talk about, please, the relationship between gut health and hyperbaric. We mentioned that people have bugs, that if these are anaerobic bugs, the hyperbaric can be beneficial in killing some of these that are not oxygen loving. Mm-hmm. But what else about gut health is really important?
So, as I mentioned, my preference is to have parents actively working on gut health before their child does hyperbarics, and there are a couple reasons why. The first of which is that, at least in my experience, what I've seen is that although we do get results with hyperbarics, even if someone is not working on gut health, the effects of hyperbarics are more durable over time if the gut is in a better place.
Right. Otherwise, those bugs come back.
Right. And the other part of that is that when your gut is not healed and perhaps it's leaky and those tight junctions are open and you do hyperbarics, your gut is open to your circulatory system.
So when you say open, you're talking about leaky gut, right?
Exactly. Correct.
So for those listeners who aren't familiar with that term, a leaky gut is?
So a leaky gut is essentially when the tight junctions of the stomach are open and there is permeability of the stomach to the circulatory system. So it's not supposed to be that way. And there
so
are many
undigested food particles get into the circulation.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And it can cause autoimmune problems. But there are a lot of things that cause leaky gut, and oftentimes children that have autism, their diets contribute significantly to that issue. But also non-organic food, even when you eat organic food, you're oftentimes still exposed to glyphosate, which is the pesticide that they spray on crop. And glyphosate actually functions to unzip the stomach lining. So it explicitly opens those tight junctions in the stomach.
So one of the things you want to see before you put a child in a hyperbaric therapy program is that they're eating organic food. They're not adding nasty glyphosate to their diet every day while you're trying to clean up their system.
I mean, that would be ideal. That
yeah,
would definitely be ideal.
It's not happening all the time, though.
It honestly, Patty, it rarely happens. Parents struggle significantly with diet, and I see a lot of cases where the children are in control. So unfortunate.
Yep.
But, yeah.
The kids run the world today. Parents want them to be their friend.
Yeah.
They don't want them to have to fight with them. Oh, that's a whole other webinar, isn't it?
But I'll also say this, Patty, which is that, honestly, before I met you, I really believed that the proper timing of hyperbarics was once the gut was in a better place, but you told me about how vaccines can cause microstrokes in the eyes, and I think you and I discussed the possibility that if that has happened, mm-hmm. It might be more optimal for a child to get into a hyperbaric chamber before
earlier
or simultaneously working on gut health. But that's
that research that we talked about, these micro strokes in the eyes from vaccines, that's the work of Andrew Molden, who's no longer with us. He was a Canadian researcher who suggests that parents take photos of their children's eyes, close-up photos pre- and post-vaccination, because sometimes these little strokes are obvious and you may get an eye turn or you may see them in the eye. And so because hyperbaric is used post-stroke, you're now rethinking that this might
right.
be an even post-vaccination.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Vaccination injury, birth injury, those are situations in which I think it would be wise to do hyperbarics, perhaps even before working on gut health, if you
have right, because that trumps the gut health to try to get to those before the child has maladaptations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. So the gut health and the hyperbaric really, really go together.
Yes.
So you want a good nutritionist, dietitian, health coach, somebody working with the family simultaneously with you doing hyperbaric.
Absolutely. And I would like to say that hyperbarics is, although it can be effective as a standalone treatment, it is not something I recommend.
It's not what I call a main course. It's a side dish.
Yeah, it's an important side dish.
It's definitely a side dish to a model that has a diet and lifestyle combo in place.
Correct, absolutely.
And this is hard to come by in today's world, where families are eating well and somebody's in the kitchen and we're not eating on the run with fast food.
Yes. Unfortunate but true reality. That's right.
Is that so true in a place like Idaho, or is life slower there?
Well, I mean, I don't think that we're in the top 10 cities for obesity, but perhaps approaching it. But it's true, I think, generally everywhere. And I would have to say that food's not food anymore in some ways. And a lot of the things that people intake, what they think is nourishing their body is just flat out not food. I mean,
I have a slide presentation I do, which I think I included this slide with your class, our goldfish crackers food.
You did. Yes.
The answer is no.
Right, right.
And shame on you if you buy that.
I loved what you said about how a lot of autistic children eat the same thing, colorless, lifeless, non-food. And you said, you cracked me up, you said something to the effect of, and how do you think this happened?
Are they all in collusion?
Children,
they've all decided
right.
in a Facebook chat room that we're only going to eat goldfish crackers and french fries.
Right.
Jennifer, it's time for another break. This has been so interesting. You're listening to the Autism Detectives. This is Patricia Lemmer. I'm talking to Jennifer Laudy from Boise, Idaho, about hyperbaric oxygen and its application to kids with autism. We'll be right back.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Patricia Lemmer, and my guest today is Jennifer Laudy from Boise, Idaho. Welcome back, Jennifer.
Thanks, Patty.
This has been so fun to hear in depth about hyperbaric oxygen and its efficacy with kids with autism. Now, your business this Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy Center of Idaho is rather unique, isn't it?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, tell us about it. You are a rental place. Do people come to you too, or mainly you take these chambers to the people?
So I do have a physical location. I've partnered with an integrative medicine doctor in the area.
Okay.
But largely what I do, especially for children with autism, is I have a rental program where we can put these soft shell chambers in someone's home for up to 3 months, and we just, you know, charge a monthly fee for it being in the house. So you do
That's fascinating.
In home. Mm-hmm.
And so how do people find out how to do this? Tell us. Do you have a website? Do you have a phone number? An email?
I do. I have all of those. So.
Okay.
So my email is hbotidaho. That's H, B as in boy, O, T, Idaho, I-D-A-H-O, at gmail.com. And the best way to reach us would be through that email. And our website is hbotidaho.com. And we do have physical locations, but oftentimes the best way to inquire about how to get this therapy is to either email or give us a call, and we can talk about your situation
mm-hmm.
to determine if you need more consistent treatment in home or whether your child might benefit from treatment a couple times a week. And the number for that is 859-537-1507. And that's a Kentucky number because that's where I got my
phone.
And I have yet to change it.
Okay. So you must have dozens of machines here. They're out all over the place.
They are out all over. That's right.
You can send them out anywhere in the country?
Yes, I can. So I can send chambers to California, to Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, you name it. And I have the ability to run out 20 chambers. So we can help 20 kids at once.
Wow. And it's not difficult to learn how to use the chamber. I would think it'd be a little bit dangerous.
No, it's not dangerous. It's mild pressure hyperbarics, and so even with an untrained operator who was reliably making mistakes, it's not dangerous. It's one of the safest medical procedures out there, and I do all of the coaching by Skype or phone call, and I'm very interested in the safety of the children, and that comes first.
And it's not hard for a parent to learn how to operate this and get it up to pressure and nobody blows up.
No one's going to blow up, I can promise you that. But we do also offer what's called a white glove service. So if you want one of our employees to fly out, set it up, and go through a session for you, it's available. But usually that's not necessary because it truly is very simple to run.
Uh-huh. So the length of a lease is 3 months.
It's up to 3 months, and then you have the option to purchase. And the other nice thing about our program is that if you do rent and you decide that you want to buy a chamber, then that rental price rolls into the purchase price. So you're not paying an
additional
fee. Yeah.
Can you give us an approximate cost?
Sure. So depending on who will be doing treatment, we have different sizes of hyperbaric chambers. So the smallest that I would put someone in, whether it's a child or otherwise, is 27 inches in diameter, and it's about 90 inches long. So children fit comfortably in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that one we rent out at about $2,000 a month. There's
mm-hmm.
a larger chamber where if you want a caregiver to be with the child is what I would recommend. It's 32 inches in diameter, and it is 93 inches long. It's actually the chamber that LeBron James uses, so it's pretty big.
Uh-huh.
And that one is about $3,000 per month.
So there's not that much difference in between the costs.
No. And oftentimes I do encourage people to get the larger chambers, especially if a caregiver is going with the child.
Right.
Those smaller models, especially males, we have about a 50% return rate because males tend to struggle more with claustrophobia. And in the autism world, we know that males are overrepresented in that population. So most often we use the larger chambers.
So if a family loved this therapy and found it beneficial and wanted to purchase it, what does one of these soft chambers cost?
So there are, that's a really good question, because there are a lot of different brands of hyperbaric chambers. And I'm interested in safety, durability of the machine, and quality of service. And if I consider all of those things, my preferred brand is OxyHealth, and they are admittedly much more expensive, more expensive than other
chambers. Yeah, but OxyHealth, I think, is the gold standard.
Yes, it is. It is. And so the mid-size chamber is about $14,000, and the larger chamber is about
$21,000. Okay.
We have payment plans.
Yeah.
But, of course, people want to try the treatment first, which is why I offer the rental program.
I think that rental program makes so much sense because you can do it when you want in the comfort of your home, and you can do it, you wouldn't do it more than once a day, would you, or would you?
Actually, oftentimes we find the best protocols twice a day.
But twice a day, really?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a time commitment, and
sure
and it does depend on the case, but you know, if I'm not considering autism, oftentimes the best protocol for wound healing and neurological issues are twice a day, 4 hours spacing between sessions. But we do that so that the plasma, CSF, and lymph stay elevated in oxygen for 10 hours as opposed to 5.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Just while you're mentioning some of these other applications, wound healing, well, I guess that'll have to wait till we come back. This time has just flown. And this is Patricia Lemmer. We're talking about hyperbaric oxygen today with Jennifer Laudy, and this has been so interesting. And we will be back in a minute to talk about some of these other applications and some of the other areas that Jennifer has gone into because of her love of gadgets. So stay tuned.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
So welcome back. This is Patricia Lemmer. I'm the author of Outsmarting Autism, and I'm with Jennifer Laudy, who allowed me to teach her class at the Boise State University on holistic psychiatry, and Jennifer has promoted my book so beautifully. Thank you. She even posted a picture on Facebook where she was reading my book in her hyperbaric chamber.
True.
Jennifer, I loved that.
Good.
That was so fun. So we were talking about some of the other applications of hyperbaric stroke. What else?
There are a lot. So there are, I believe it's 14 FDA-approved indications for hyperbarics, and most of which is wound healing. So 80% of the billing for hyperbarics is wound healing.
How about concussions?
Yes. So these are the non-FDA-approved indications, and these are this is what I work with and what I'm passionate about. So traumatic brain injury, concussion, stroke, but especially traumatic brain injury, there is overwhelming research that shows it is very effective for TBI, traumatic brain injury.
How about Parkinson's?
So the literature is, I won't say non-existent. There are some promising animal studies. And
uh-huh.
It's very difficult.
They're not studying Parkinson's very much.
Well, it's difficult. And part of that is because we often rely on SPECT imaging for hyperbarics to do pre- and post-tests and EEG, and people's Parkinson's shake, so it's very difficult to get a clear EEG. But I will say this, I've personally had a Parkinson's patient do mild hyperbarics, and I gave him my spiel of, you know, you need to do 40 sessions for this to be a durable effect,
uh-huh.
and, you know, we're talking about regrowing myelin sheaths and new neurons in the brain and effectively reducing tremor. And he said, okay, I'll try 5 sessions. And he took the escargot approach. And he also was doing CBD simultaneously, but it's been a week after those 5 sessions, and his tremor's gone.
No.
It is absent.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Jennifer, you are wandering into some other areas, and the two that you showed me that I thought were so interesting, maybe you could touch on them briefly. One is your virtual reality instrument and something called touch points. Can you just talk briefly about those? We don't have a whole lot of time left.
Yes, and I would ask that you jump in when I talk about vision therapy because your information in your book just has led me towards this gadget. So vision therapy is absolutely crucial. And
everybody who knows me knows how passionate I am about working with a developmental optometrist.
Oh,
so
good.
These are things, gadgets that are adjunct to a child or a patient in vision therapy.
Correct. So I was thinking as I was exercising in virtual reality like I do, it's the only way I can manage to do it, that it would be really cool if we had an eye tracker in virtual reality so that children could do vision therapy at home and in an engaging environment playing games. And so my research led me to this virtual reality system that has an eye tracker, and they have games built into the eye tracking system that allow for correction of the various vision problems that autistic children often have.
So what is this system called?
Oh, you would ask me that. And I've looked at
people
so many.
Can email you if they're interested in it.
They can email me, but it's also on my website.
Oh, okay, good.
Virtual reality
and,
is there.
And my hesitation, as I told you, with anything with visual reality is that you're not moving through space. And that's
you
a really
are.
Important part of vision therapy is the movement. But it sure looks fascinating, and I think some optometrists are actually using it.
They are. And, you know, it's interesting, Patty. People are using virtual reality, and the children are moving through space. So they have these new programs where you put a headset on and you have these handheld devices, and the kids are moving while vision correction. Yeah.
Oh, well, I would love to see that. That sounds
You'll
amazing.
You'll have to come back, and I have it here, and we'll do some vision therapy on you.
Wow. And what is touch points?
So touch points are these bands that you wear on your wrist, and they are they're square, and they elicit a vibration. It's tactile, and it's a very deep vibration that's bilateral in nature, and so it alternates the vibration between your left wrist and your right wrist.
Uh-huh.
And what we see is that it lowers the alpha activity in the brain, and so functionally what happens as a result of that is that we mitigate things like meltdowns and temper tantrums, and just by nature of this vibration.
Wow. I bet a lot of people will be interested in that. And is that on your website,
cheap.
Too?
It is. It is. Mm-hmm.
And how old do you have to be to use touch points?
Well,
can little kids learn how to use them, or do you just program them?
You don't even have to program them. It's simple. You just strap them on your wrists, and you can. There are various speeds that are indicated for different issues. So if you're trying to help someone sleep, the alternation between the left and the right is slower, but it's very, very simple. It's amazing how effective it is, especially in nonverbal children, is what I've seen it be just kind of a miracle for. I think one of my teaching assistants, whom you met after class, she took a pair of touch points to her work, and she works with autistic children as an aide. And she said that she put the touch points on every kid she worked with. Every single one had a positive reaction, whether it was
amazing.
In the form of...
Yeah. You leave them on all day?
They can be, yeah. There's no side effect to wearing them all day.
No.
But, yeah.
But do you... Does your body acclimate and then not react to it as it would initially?
That's a really good question. And no, there is no evidence of... the development of habituation to these things.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer, as we wind up here, it appears to me, and as I've learned so much from you, that hyperbaric oxygen is a very, very valuable tool for people with autism on all ends of the spectrum. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm.
And when we wrap up in a minute, we'll get all your information so that people can contact you about whether it's appropriate for their child and how they might rent some equipment from you. So we will be right back and wrap up.
Inspiration and motivation is just a podcast away at hrnradio.com.
So today we've talked, this is Patricia Lemmer, and I've been talking to Jennifer Laudy on the Autism Detectives. Jennifer, give us your contact information for the Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy of Idaho. The website is?
HBOT. Idaho, IDHO.com. So HBOTIdaho.com.
And the email is HBOTIdaho@gmail.
Correct.
.com. And Jennifer, this has been fascinating. And for those of you who want to learn more about hyperbaric oxygen, you can go to her website or to my book, Outsmarting Autism, and read about it, and Jennifer would be happy to answer any of your questions. So this has been a great pleasure, and I want to wish everybody a happy, happy holiday, and keep on breathing. Right, Jennifer?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much, Patty. You've really changed so many lives here in Idaho, so it's my absolute
That was so much fun. Thank you.
Yes.
It's great knowing you.
You as well.
All right. Bye-bye.